Public Service Committee, we are all welcome. I think everyone is here. Although we had a problem of fog, of mist, that was causing problems to the flight, but they are all in here. You are welcome. Are there any apologies? We don't have. Okay. Comrade Reed?
Madam Tembu may arrive late, indicated he might be here 30 minutes late. Mrs. Motsomela is not going to be with us due to other commitments, and so is Mr. Mini.
Okay. Colleagues, I want to give an opportunity to the chairperson of the Joint Budget Committee, Mkalipi, to say some few words before we start our meeting. So I'm Kalibi Sitibene Abba. Hope to learn more. Yeah.
Thanks so much, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Komomo. We do appreciate your invitation to ourselves to be part of this meeting. As highlighted earlier on, it is every member's interest to see to it that the scarce resources that are allocated by government are used optimally for the best benefit of all people of this country. I think the matter under review in this meeting will be highlighting some issues in that regard. And as a joint budget committee, we do have direct interest in matters of budget. But budgets are also informed by the softer issues, the so-called nine financial issues. So we're interested in the meeting, and we do appreciate your invitation to us. Thanks.
Thank you, Comrade Kalipi. The agenda in front of us is the hearing report of the Public Service Commission on Financial Misconduct in the Public Service 2005 and 2006. I wish to welcome the Public Service Commission, all the commissioners that are here, but maybe it's good for us to introduce ourselves so that we know who are we dealing with. Well, I'm John Gumomo, the chairperson of the Public Service and Administration. On my left,
I'm Ngaba Gcobaza, member of the Public Service and Administration Portfolio Committee.
I'm Commissioner Giseko from the Public Service Commission.
Richard Baloy, a member of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration.
Ikimele Mangale, Department of Public Service Administration.
Juan Mchen, the Office of the Public Service Administration.
Hello, I'm Neil Newman from COSATU.
I'm Joseph Marks from the Public Service Association.
The other side.
Frankie Jenkins, Legal Advisor to Parliament.
Jean-Marie Duval, Media 24.
Lewis Rapkin, Office of the Minister for the Public Service Administration.
Hello, I'm Leo, Committee Assistant for Joint Budget Committee.
And a member of this joint committee.
Greg Schneeman, member of the Joint Budget Committee.
Amanda Gambosa, member of the Joint Budget Committee.
Cecilia Mashuku, member of the Joint Budget Committee.
Dietzelbe, member of the Joint Budget Committee.
Mario Swart, member of the Joint Budget Committee.
Buti Mkhalipi, co-chairperson of the Joint Budget Committee.
Kenneth Kumalo, PC Public Service and Administration.
Caroline Mampuru, Office of the Public Service Commission. Siniva Vega, Office of the Public Service Commission.
Karen Hardik, Parliamentary Secretariat.
The people behind us, sometimes we sit with the media and they go and report things that are not supposed to. We want to know who you are. It's good to know who is in the meeting. Because we read things that we don't know of things that we don't want them to be on the public domain before we've discussed them. Now, in welcoming everybody in this meeting, we will deal with the item as South Africans. I don't want you to participate here, fellow, as we say it's them and us. Even the public commissioner must participate when we are trying to engage them. They engage us too. And that is the way in which things should happen. But if they come and make a presentation and they expect us to interrogate, they must say to us how would they love, would like this country to do things themselves. They must see themselves as South Africans, not as different parties, whatever. We're all South Africans. That must be understood. So I want to give over to you, Commissioner Nozipo.
Honorable Komomo, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Administration, and Honorable Kalipi, Chairperson of the Joint Budget Committee, on behalf of the Public Service Commission, we're pleased to be here to fulfill our constitutional duty to report to you. We're particularly pleased that we also are addressing an additional parliamentary committee, as it were, because the Public Service Commission is the enabling oversight arm for Parliament. We are appointed to enable Parliament to fulfill its oversight responsibilities with regards to public administration on an informed basis. So it really pleases us when we can get to address other committees and on pertinent matters. The report we are going to give today is on financial misconduct for 2005-2006. Financial misconduct is actually an indicator of the extension of corruption in the public service. When the Public Service Commission talks about corruption, it's not on the basis of perceptions, but on the basis of indicators that can be tracked and pinned down. This flows from the Public Finance Management Act, which requires that the Minister of Public Service and Administration must make regulations prescribing the manner, form and circumstances in which allegations and disciplinary and criminal charges of financial misconduct are reported to National Treasury, the DPSA, and the executive authority of the department concerned, together with the Public Service Commission. Of these entities, it is the Public Service Commission, only the Public Service Commission, that then compiles all of this information into a report that is delivered to Parliament, for Parliament to be able to get a sense of what is happening in the public service. I will then hand over to my colleagues, our Chief Director, Ms. Caroline Mampuru, assisted by Finney Viviers, to go into the report, and we'll take questions after that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, honorable members. As Commissioner DiSekwe has already said, the report is on financial misconduct. The report is one of the building blocks that indicate what the status is in departments in relation to corruption and financial misconduct. This report covers the financial year 2005 and 2006. How I plan to do this is I will look at the introduction and look at the legislative framework and look at how departments report on financial misconduct and spend a moment looking at the statistical overview and the general observations that are contained in the report. The public expects that government must operate in a transparent and an accountable manner. The public is entitled to such accountability and effective accountability in respect of public funds and the management of government programs and services. Public servants, therefore, as the custodians of public resources, should administer public resources in an accountable and transparent manner on behalf of the entire citizens. Thus, effective accountability in respect of public funds is just but one measure that indicates and strengthens the fight against corruption. But it will not make sense if acts of corruption and fraud are discovered and nothing happens. It is precisely for this reason that the PSC then reports on an annual basis on what the status of financial misconduct is within departments. Commissioner has already alluded to the legislative framework. It is in terms of the PSMA that departments are expected to report. It is further in regard to the Treasury regulations, which sets out the field in terms of which the reporting must be done, the name and the rank of the official against whom the proceedings were instituted, the charges indicating the financial misconduct the official is alleged to have committed, and the findings, and furthermore, the sanction that is imposed by the official and any further action taken against the official, including criminal charges or civil proceedings. In this regard, taking what is mandatory reporting, the PSC has built on this and kind of come up with a standard format which we've given to departments really in an attempt to make sure that the quality of the reporting is of an acceptable standard, is of a standard that we can use. However, having done that, we realize that departments still do not report and comply with the prescripts on a continuous basis. The PSC has to remind departments. We have to disseminate a circular on an annual basis to remind departments of this mandatory requirement of reporting to, among others, the PSC. And as I've already indicated, then we tried to put in a template so that the quality of the reporting that we get improves. Despite this, departments still provide us with information that does not appear to be quality checked, and the information that is provided is insufficient. I will highlight some of the areas where departments have failed to indicate crucial information that would change in a very meaningful way the shape and reporting that the PSC does. Looking at how departments have reported in the financial year under review, all national departments have submitted input. Of the 34 national departments, 10 departments submitted a nil report. That means they did comply with their reporting requirements. However, they've indicated that there have been no cases of financial misconduct. Looking at provincial departments, those are the departments that have complied and submitted input. Notably, the Gauteng Province Department of Education failed to provide an input. Of the 105 provincial departments that have been submitted, 54 have submitted a nil report. When we look at this reporting, it is encouraging given that in the last round, five national departments had failed to submit inputs as required, and 13 provincial departments had also failed. So this is an improvement in terms of simple basic compliance. Looking at the figures then of cases that have been reported, it is notable that in the year under review, there are 771 cases of financial misconduct. This constitutes an increase from last year, but this must also be seen in light of the fact that in the last financial year, we had departments that did not submit their inputs. So the increase in the number of cases can be ascribed to the fact that we have more and better reporting in this current financial year. So as I said, the percentage of cases reported by national department has increased by 41% in this current financial year. And this is noteworthy because if you look at the headcount, the national department employs fewer employees at 32%, whereas provinces employ 68%. But your rate of cases is higher in the national department. That for us is a worrisome trend. The trend of the higher ratio of financial misconduct at national level points to the fact that employees in national departments are then more prone to commit financial misconduct. Looking at the individual departments, the Department of Justice is the department that has reported the highest number of finalized cases in this financial year. That might be indicative of a more vigilant department. It does not necessarily mean that they would have more corruption. It could also be linked to the fact that they have measures of reporting corruption within. They have a hotline that they have up and running. So for us, that is indicative of tighter controls and steps taken to root out corruption amongst, you know, peers within a department. Similar to 2003 and 4 and 5 financial years, the highest number of financial cases compared to other provinces were reported in the Eastern Cape province. Having said that, I must say the reason for that can be a high number of cases that have come from that province in relation to social development cases. Looking further at the statistical overview, it's clear that fraud and theft is a problem within departments. Certainly, this is a trend in previous years as well. It's one of the trends that we worried about as a public service commission. Fraud and theft, therefore, comprises 64% of overall number of cases that have been reported. For us, that points to weak controls, really, and it's very disconcerting for us. So this high prevalence of these offences remains disconcerting, and as I said, may be ascribed to lack of proper control systems. For the financial year 2005 and 2006, the highest number of fraud and theft cases were reported by national departments. Again, we see that trend in national departments, and it's followed then by the Eastern Cape province at 25%. Of these cases, the department that reported the highest number of fraud and theft cases is the Department of Education in the Eastern Cape, where we've got 104 cases, followed by the Department of Health in the Western Cape with 32 cases. As I've already pointed out, this case is related to social grant fraud. As one of the things that the public service has to report in terms of is the level of the employees charged. How we've tried to get value in this level of reporting, we've kind of in the template that I referred to earlier, standardize it and rather than using the level, because the levels are in some instance referred to differently within departments, we've kind of used the salary scale. And notable to say that financial misconduct prevails at all levels in the public service. There's no level that is immune to financial misconduct, but the largest number of financial misconduct cases is encountered at production level, and that is salary level 1 to 8. Therefore, I clearly point again to the question of controls within departments. Employees on salaries level 6 and 7 have committed the highest number of financial misconduct cases. This is a trend that follows from previous years. Notable that at level 6 and 7, this is the usually the level at which people become into management or supervisory positions for the first time and have certain powers that they never had in the past. And for us, it means that although ethics is a responsibility of the department and must be inculcated at every level in government, in the public service, instilling a culture of professionalism and high work ethos must start with management and must come down specifically to that level. Certainly there's a need to address this group and do training. Before I close on this issue of levels, it's also disconcerting for us to note that at senior management level, that is level 13 to 16, that is your SMS, your senior management cadre, there's a total of 19 cases that were reported. And if the expectation is that your senior managers must inculcate the culture and they must make sure that there's integrity and they must make sure there are proper controls and you have that level of cases reported, that is a worrisome trend for us. Looking then at the outcome of financial misconduct cases, it is clear that of the cases that are reported, a lot of them are not without substance, as 81% of employees that were charged were ultimately found guilty of financial misconduct. However, 23 instances, departments reported that disciplinary cases were not finalized because people resigned. We also worried about that. Looking at the sanctions imposed, we note that dismissal still remains the most prevalent sanction, and that is followed by financial written warnings. It is expected that the sanction of dismissal imposed by departments will act as a strong deterrent throughout the public service and should reduce the number of future occurrences. Ensuring that employees are disciplined for wrongdoing fosters a practice that violators are likely to be caught and punished, and it also demonstrates that the public service is committed to an environment of high ethical standards and integrity. Looking at the criminal proceedings that have been instituted as a result of financial misconduct, in terms of treasury regulations, where the state has suffered loss, the matter must be reported in writing by the accounting officer to the relevant law enforcement agency for possible criminal investigation and prosecution. In the period under the review, 199 cases were taken to the next level then, and criminal proceedings were instituted. In 49% of the reporting cases, the reported cases, that is the financial misconduct cases, no criminal proceedings were instituted against employees. Although departments were requested to provide reasons for not instituting criminal proceedings against employees, departments failed to submit details in this regard. Although the figure there of 49% looks alarming, it should not necessarily alarm members because of the fact that in some instances the nature of the financial misconduct does not lend itself to criminal prosecution. And that is why as the PSC, we've kind of tried to enhance reporting and ask departments to indicate why criminal proceedings have not been instituted. That could certainly allay our fears and worries because we would be, you know, that kind of reporting would be meaningful in the sense that we would know that not all of the cases that were reported by their nature allowed for criminal prosecution. In 189 cases, departments failed to provide any indication whether criminal or any other proceedings were instituted against employees charged with financial misconduct. Again, this is an area where we feel departments can do better because of the fact that in terms of PRECA as well, you get mandatory reporting requirements where offences of financial misconduct that is in excess of 100,000 must be reported to the SEP, and we really would want to see an improvement in this, at particularly this level of reporting. Looking at the figures indicate that the total cost emanating from unauthorized, irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditure and losses resulting from criminal conduct that is reported by departments and provinces for the year under review, the amount comes to 45 million. And having said that, I need to mention then that a lot of departments did not indicate the cost of financial misconduct. So although we have a better amount of 45 million, we need to be to keep in mind that departments did not indicate. Although there's been an increase also in the number of cases reported, if you look at the figure there that was given of 45 million, you would note, members, honorable members, that in the last financial year, where we had less cases, we actually had a much bigger amount in terms of financial misconduct. The last year, we had about 120 million related to financial misconduct, but the cases that were reported were less. So that might be an improvement, but before we all accept that as fact, we need to accept that some department did not indicate the cost of financial misconduct. The observations that we've made then, I've already spoken to the one relating to national departments, that there's more cases there, and if we consider the fact that provincial departments are also at the coalface of service delivery, your expectation, and given that the provincial departments employ more people, your expectation would have been that there'd be more cases in the provincial departments, but the facts speak otherwise. Although it could be perceived as a positive indication that provinces have managed to cap corruption to some extent, the more probable explanation is that provinces are not effectively dealing with financial misconduct, or they're not accurately reporting on these cases. This assumption for us is not a thumbsuck, and we base this assumption on the basis of various investigations and interventions that the PSC has been involved with in the last few years. Through the past four financial years, the PSC reports have shown that cases in the category of fraud and theft have been the most prevalent. I've already talked to that trend. It is worrisome for us, and you know, I keep stressing that it's indicative of weak financial control. The strong link between investigators of cases of financial misconduct and the internal audit units of departments should be established. It does not appear that it's prevalent. This will assist with the identification of patterns of financial misconduct and the amendment of the internal audit coverage plan when financial and fraud risks materialize. How we hope that departments will use this report is that they will look at the areas that are prevalent and try to come up with internal risk control measures, one particularly the levels and the kind of misconduct that is prevalent within departments. We are of the view that department training programs on improving ethical behavior should be devised to enhance the ethical environment within the department. And we also have the view that this kind of training must happen and be focused really at the levels that have proved to be more exposed to financial misconduct. As I've already stated, the prevalence of financial misconduct is relevant. It's prevalent at level 6 and 7, and that this is a trend that has emerged even in the other financial years. The other thing that needs to be mentioned in relation to people at this level is that it has emerged that the cases of financial misconduct at this level often have to do with negligence. Thus, focus training on the code of conduct with particular reference to the performance of duties will therefore have to be done in departments. And this might, we believe, alleviate negligence identified in this department and lead to a higher level of professional ethics as well as professional conduct. As I've already indicated, most departments fail to provide information regarding the amounts involved in the financial misconduct, and notably, they've also failed to indicate whether that money has been recovered or not. Disclosure of the amounts involved and the recovery of debt is necessary for, you know, us to be able to give you a meaningful report. It was therefore recommended that the National Treasury should review the Treasury regulations with a view to compelling departments to report financial misconduct costs we're saying we would like to see the Treasury regulations amended with the view of compelling departments to review financial costs as a result of financial misconduct. Thank you.
Thank you. I think this is a very good report to give us the leeway to take it forward. I'm not sure to other commissioners, you don't want to make addition to what is presented already by Prudence.
No, Chair, except maybe I will speak more to the questions that emanate. The only one point that I'd like to come back to is that very often, I think, in particular the media, judges the public service on perceptions of what might be happening in the public service and what might not be happening in the public service. And this work by the Public Service Commission is driven by the need to pin down the nature of the problems that we're dealing with. What is it that we're talking about when we're talking about corruption? And we have measures that can be used to assess that. That you had 771 cases of misconduct in a public service of how many people? We employ how many people?
1.1 million.
How about 1.2?
For us as a public service commission, we'll never be satisfied until we reach a zero rate of tolerance of any kind of misconduct, particularly related to corruption. But looking at these figures, they give us an indication that it's about something like 15% of officials who've been involved in these kinds of activities if you take the totality of the public service. So when you go into the report, it enables you to put things on some kind of scale and be able to judge what's happening. I would also reiterate the point that was made by my colleague that with the Eastern Cape and departments like Justice and Constitutional Affairs, the higher incidence there may be a result of the rigorous approach they've taken to addressing financial misconduct. included because of the rigorous measures they have in place, more of it is being surfaced. Where we would worry more is where we got nil returns in departments. There we would be of concern and want to follow up to find out what exactly is happening. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner, I think you two, you are, seems to me you are in a position of a narrative report of this slide. Is it possible, maybe, even if not in this meeting, that maybe you submit it to the members when they are out of this meeting, they look at that narrative input as Putin was putting squarely? But if we are going to raise questions, I would suggest that we take from slide page 3, slide by slide, in order to follow up what we are doing. Clarity. Susan Collin, I don't remember all your names.
Yeah. Thank you for this comprehensive input. You know, it tells us that this organ that we have put in place is working. It's really tackling the challenges head on. That is one thing we must recognize in this community. A lot of effort is being put on, and there are committees really that we know interact quite often with the outcome that is here. I really want to make a statement, just a statement, before I make the question for clarity. It's a statement that says, in reality, it may sound alarming when we look into this report, but one asks himself about if there was never an instrument like PFMA, where would we be as this government? Because if some of us have experienced what happened in the past, particularly during the days, the era of the homeland, you know, the character of embezzlement of public funds was just an order of the day. You know, to those who benefited, it was just the way some were even, the public service, some of them were even boasting about it. Then today we've got this PFMA, meaning that we are confronting the problem. Now, I just want to check, there is a statement that says a number of these corruption or these activities, these uncalled for activities, is detected at production level. In our position in this committee, we really don't understand that, what you mean. And again, it was also an indication to me that there is a lot happened, found it happened with the Department of Education. Now I'm asking myself, level of corruption, what does it mean now with the Department of Education? Where does it fit in now? Again, I want to say, there are really symptoms here when we get reports like non-compliance, in the sense of some departments not submitting regular reports. Some of the symptoms that there is a problem there. Saying that they don't comply is a problem there. But before I step off, there's one Well, one thing I don't find here, maybe it is reported by the commissioners in other committees. Wherever there is a problem that is being solved, essentially there are three major things that one does. You take action in terms of education or correction or punishing. I only see the punitive side here. I hear about the punitive side. I don't get a sense of the correction and a sense of the education. If I can be taken to that level to understand that not only punishment is being meted, but there's also an effort that is really educating these people, because I hope a person who has the chance to utilize the public public money is put in a position of trust. So what efforts are there in grooming these people to be ready for those positions? Thank you.
Mine is around the. I'm sorry, I'm not going to follow this because I've got a lot of comments. The first comment is about the control systems on page 11, where it is mentioned that I think on page 11, where, I mean, the whole page, but what I've extracted is that there is a problem on the control systems within the department. I would like to share with this a meeting that we have observed those issues as a joint budget committee, more especially on housing. That housing, one of the departments is housing, that we have observed that there are no control systems in place. And what we are seeing in the delivery of housing as a portfolio committee on housing, there are a lot of problems that we are seeing there. So this is to ensure that what the commission has observed, we have also observed, is to affirm that. And then secondly is on the issue of people who resign from their areas of employment. And what the trend that we have observed is that a person is moved from the department because he has conducted a financial misconduct. And then the other department is going to appoint the very same person. So we don't understand now what is happening. So it's one of the issues that we have observed. And then on the issue of the regulations, I mean the reporting system, where the departments are not cooperating. I don't know whether the commission itself, what powers does the commission have to ensure that the enforcement of the regulations, I just want to know what does the commission have in place, I mean the authority to enforce the regulations or to ensure that departments are reporting. And then the last one is about the lengthy periods that are taking place during the cases. If someone has been suspended, that particular person is suspended with full pay, and then we'll find that it has a financial implications. And I think, I don't know, how do you think that one can be sorted out? Thanks.
Thanks, Comrade Chairperson. My question to some of the comments that are made on page 3, probably the first two bullet points, and it really relates to the number of cases. Whilst we've been told it's 771 cases, if I'm not mistaken, for the 05-06 period, financial year, I would really want to get an idea as to what sense does the Public Service Commission have as to the impact of these cases, what is the impact of these cases on the running of particular departments? And in addition to that, what is the impact on the implementation of government's programs? Are we seeing any impact on that? Is there any impediment to the effective running of departments and implementation of programs? It could be for a number of reasons, I guess, also for the length of time it may take, I don't know, to resolve these cases, but could be an indication as to whether we have any sense of that. Thanks, Chair.
Hello. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. My question actually relates to the collaboration between the Office of the Public Protector and the Public Service Commission. Whilst the Commission correctly cites the Regulation 4.3 in terms of which the accounting officer in a department must report any incidents of financial misconduct and even name the official involved and the nature of the offense. I want to know, in instances where members of the public might know of certain financial misconduct and say, in this case, choose to report that to the Public Protector, Office of the Public Protector, instead of reporting that to the Public Service Commission. In terms of the memorandum that you of understanding that you have with the Office of the Public Protector, are there cases where members of the public reported some acts of corruption on the part of state officials to the Office of the Public Protector, which cases in turn were referred to you, instead of you relying only on information that comes from within departments themselves, and this information of course being given to you by the accounting officers. Whilst, of course, I would agree that out of more than a million public servants, 771 cases of financial misconduct perhaps should not be seen to be too alarming. What is rather alarming to me is the financial cost that goes with those particular cases. And you have given us a figure of 45 million rand. Lastly, you, on the one hand, are saying that if in instances where departments have not instituted criminal charges against those that have committed these acts, we should not necessarily see that as meaning that, you know, those necessarily amounted to acts of theft and fraud, the category that you've referred to. But what powers, in terms of the act that governs the PSC, what powers do you have to compel departments to do exactly what they're supposed to do? Can you subpoena them? Because if there is just lack of clarity about these things, it says to me that you do have some powers and you must compel departments because you are a Chapter 9 or Chapter 10 institution. So I would like you to clarify me on those issues. Thank you very much.
It will be the last and give maybe the first round commissioners at least to respond to some questions that are raised.
Yes, thank you, Chair. You report here that 81% of the cases of 771 cases were found guilty of financial misconduct. Yet, to follow on this point of my colleague on the right here, you know, the question of criminal proceedings, only 25% of those cases were actually, you know, criminal proceedings were instituted against them. And there's also a record here of 13 cases of more than 100,000 where no criminal proceedings were instituted against these employees. And, you know, this is very disconcerting because I think also the fact that people leave the employee once they are found guilty of financial misconduct and they resign, you know, we should actually be going for them on the criminal procedure side because that's the only way in which we can, you know, stamp out this and get rid of this type of financial misconduct. You know, it's only 49% of the reported cases, no criminal proceedings were instituted against employees. That's on page 30. And also on page 30, for the 2006, 5 and 6 financial year, criminal proceedings were instituted against only 25% of the cases. So it's really a very low percentage of those people that are being criminally proceeded against. I feel that we should be looking at that possibly as a solution to the whole thing.
Did you want to raise something before we give the commissioner to respond to this question? Okay. Now, I think commissioners will need to give you an opportunity to respond to some of the clarities and questions that are raised by the members before we go forward with our discussion.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps the point that we were making about pinning corruption down didn't come across clearly. For the Public Service Commission, even one single incident of financial misconduct is intolerable because it entails abuse of public resources that could be meaningfully used to redress social imbalances and to meet the needs of the people. What we're saying here is that we're putting in front of you, honourable members, the scale, what exactly is happening in the public service, so that we shift from talking about perceptions to say to you, this is what happened last year. 771 cases were reported. Look at it. Draw your own conclusions. We'll come back next year again to give you information that will enable you to put matters in scale. So I thought I should begin by correcting that we do not tolerate corruption on any level, be it 5, 1, or 10. But we were bringing the figures to you to see. Similarly, with the estimate of the expenditure of the cost of it of 45 million, again, those are figures that we hope you will use to look at the sum total of the budget allocated to the public service. Then you can say to departments, we find this totally intolerable as elected members entrusted with the mandate to oversee and ensure that the executive does the right thing. In relation to our relationship with the public protector and the public, we actually do get cases reported to the Public Service Commission through the National Anti-Corruption Hotline by ordinary citizens. I guess what would be of importance for us is to ensure that we do not duplicate with the public protector, that we deal with issues in a manner that speedily leads to resolution and redress where there is a need for redress. The Honourable Member talks about control systems being the issue, the problem. We would agree that is some of the recommendations allude to the need to get back into controls and tighten them, bearing in mind that what we're dealing with here is virtually an overhaul of government, of public administration in the last 13 years. New systems have been put in place that require a new understanding by the public service delivery on a scale unprecedented before 1994 in housing, in social grants and all of that. Precisely because of that, those are areas that we need to keep an eye on and ensure that the public service refines its minimum anti-corruption capacity, its fraud prevention systems, and all the mechanisms that are supposed to be in place. We have begun as the Public Service Commission to issue summonses to Directors General to invoke the powers that we have. And we hope also to be able to draw on the benefits we've got from the amended Public Service Bill to resolve issues very, very quickly. We are past the time when people were learning to work with these systems. We now expect them to work with these systems and be able to come back next year and say to Parliament, we issued summonses to so many DGs, and they told us that this is what is happening, and we told them that we need them to go back and fix it in this particular manner, in that particular manner. My colleagues will elaborate on the prosecution matters. And of course, it is a matter of education everywhere. Mention was made of dragging financial misconduct across the public service. Somebody commits financial misconduct before you can conclude the case. They've dragged it to another department. They've been employed there. And to all intents and purposes, they seem to be legitimate members. These are, again, are possibilities that are opened by the restructuring of the public service that has devolved employment, leaving it up to individual departments to do the counter-checking, follow-up, not compelling public officials when they apply for jobs to provide referees from the departments that they come from. So I can be a treasurer and commit a crime and then hope to get a job at DSA and not even cite a single member from my my previous employer and get away with it. But the more we review these things, the more then employment practices are going to be tightened. Thank you.
Thank you. Any addition to it? So, what the commission has said?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On the issue of 81% of people being found guilty of financial misconduct and only 21% being handed over for criminal prosecution. As I said earlier, the nature of the allegations of the nature of the offense that a person has been found guilty of does not in all instances lend itself to criminal prosecution. If we're talking instances of negligence, if we're talking instances of failure to follow the prescripts, the policies, those do not, by their nature, in all instances, allow for criminal prosecution. It's instances where people have done something more than just being negligent or careless or not following policies that people then can be found guilty of criminal conduct. And the offenses of theft and corruption are those that, by their nature, then would necessitate referral to law enforcement agencies. As I said, our worry is that departments don't indicate the reasons why cases were not referred for criminal prosecution, and if they did, then we would be better placed to assess whether there are a high number of instances where then the offences can lend themselves for criminal prosecution and it's not happening.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I've heard the response, but I remain unconvinced because, on the one hand, the Commissioner is talking about summonses that they are issuing, although she does not offer us any specifics in that regard. Maybe she believes that this should be deferred to the next year when they come here again. But in this very report, the worst version of the report, the summary of the report, paragraph 2.7, criminal proceedings instituted against employees charged with financial misconduct. The second paragraph, the last paragraph there, says, following an analysis of cases in the categories, quote, fraud and theft, unquote, and corruption, it was found that departments indicated in 13 cases that criminal proceedings were not instituted against employees who had committed financial misconduct in excess of 100,000 rand. My question, given the powers conferred upon the Commission, with the summonses as one of the powerful instruments, why would the Commission not act even in the face of such glaring evidence of such financial misconduct referred to above exceeding 100,000 rand. I think we cannot afford to be ambivalent about this. We just have got to say these are the steps that we've taken and with the powers that the Act gives to us and so forth. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's a misunderstanding here. The Public Service Commission oversees, goes into departments, and investigate cases, and upon conclusion, make recommendations on what needs to be done. We are no longer the employers of the public service. Once that role was taken away from the Public Service Commission, the Public Service Commission cannot discipline officials. We cannot be referee, player, and linesman. So we go there, we unravel the corruption, and we recommend to ministers to take particular action. It's up to the ministers then to institute legal proceedings together with the accounting officer using the legal processes that are separate from the Public Service Commission. We cannot prosecute on behalf of individual departments. However, we can sit on their backs on your behalf and say, why have you not prosecuted?
And that's
why have you not prosecuted?
With your permission, Chair, that very point is very well understood by me. It's the latter that I'm talking about. I'm not suggesting that you take the kind of action you refer to that is the former. The latter that I'm concerned about. That's exactly it.
I'll give you, but sometimes the some things that we must look at ourselves. As the politician and decision makers of this institution, when a recommendation is made to us, what are we doing about it? That is very important. Maybe this is what Cello wants to hear from the commissioner. We have made a recommendation to such a department. They never take any. That may be this what he wants. Because sometimes it seems to be pointing a finger to you and forget these three, five fingers are looking at us as well. So, Rich, do you want to say something?
Yes, Chief. Maybe one should start by joining those like that the colleague who have indicated in appreciation that this government has actually created structures that are meant to address issues like financial matters, how to handle and how to account for mishandling financial matters. I think we need to appreciate that. We need to appreciate that the zero tolerance stance of this government actually is working as we see such interventions like the reports that we are considering today. To then say, these are the facts. And this being the facts, then what is it that then has to be done? I think we need to appreciate that. Of course, as the two committees of parliament, we need to agree that it is unacceptable against this zero tolerance stance of the government. It's unacceptable that we have this figure of 771 cases of financial misconduct. I think we need to agree. We also need to agree that it's also unacceptable because this figure represents a growth from last year's figure. We need to say it is unacceptable. And also to say that it is unacceptable because the impact thereof, we just see one. Or Bushneman has indicated that you know it will be proper to also assess the impact, but we just see one here that we can also join forces in not accepting that. This translates into about 45 million that actually cannot be accounted for. It's unacceptable, really, that this kind of a situation is what is confronting us today. We are told this is not perception. It's not like a thumbs-up figure. It's information, it's facts, it's readily available. It's unacceptable that the situation is just like that. And Jefferson, I think we'll agree also that it's unacceptable that the six nations have a share in the list of those that are said to be stumbling blocks in dealing with issues like that. We need to say it's unacceptable. Perhaps maybe as we say against this point, we then come to understand why this government, through the Department of Public Service and Administration, in addressing this issue of zero tolerance, has come out with a bill amending the Public Service Act, which is meant to tighten areas where they actually bar the appointment of public service officials by departments on identifying that they've got records of a corruption or a criminal record and stuff like that. Now, that's a bill that as Parliament we have just considered. I think it's now at the NCOP level and stuff like that. We believe that that's a step in the right direction by this government to address. But of course, Chairperson, I think we will also agree that it's unacceptable that out of these 771 cases, 496 of them are related to cases of theft and fraud. Because in that regard, you know, you actually, once there is a conviction, I'm not sure this 81% conviction, if it's largely on those cases arising from the category of the 496 or the others. But honestly speaking, if that actually comes from the 496, it is quite clear that you know, if it's negligent, you may then say maybe give a benefit of a doubt that there may be some contributory factors that are actually beyond a personal contribution. But if it's issues related to fraud and theft, it's really too much. It's unacceptable that we actually have to address that. Of course, having said this, and this presentation having been made to us as committees of Parliament, then the question is, so what? And that then comes back to what you have said, Jefferson, and of course it is true. It is true that the Public Service Commission, since its inception, has conducted investigations in some instances, initiated by the Public Service Commission, or actually initiated outside but followed up by the Public Service Commission, and also responding to instances where the department responds. The Public Service Commission has actually investigated and done some work in terms of the Constitution and presented reports to Parliament. Now, what then we need to do, I think, Commissioner, Disego, said, yes, you are presenting this report so that we see the picture in real terms as to what is holding against this issue. And of course, it cannot just be that we receive this report, then we note this report, it's us talking about this today, it ends up there. But obviously, this is instructive for us as true public servants. This is instructive of us that we need to develop a program. We need to develop a program to then say, what is it that then we do? Because this situation is cannot be accepted. If it's a growth now, what may prevent this figure from growing? As we are sitting here, some of the acts that are reported on here, you might find that they find their way into our public service. What is it that we need to do? I think we have a responsibility. The Chairperson, you are very right to say Parliament has a role to play. When, from a technical point of view, the Commission submits a report that indicates like this, then from a political oversight responsibility point of view, then we need to actually do something. I think that is what we may then say. Maybe really this is what we need to do. And to then say to the Commission that be rest assured that as committees of Parliament will definitely do that. You'll remember that later in the year, I think it's in October, the Portfolio Commission on Public Service and Administration is actually calling for a meeting. We don't want just an ordinary meeting where it is just ourselves as a committee, but we are saying we want to actually create a round table where we are going to present the Public Service Commission's recommendations and then see what progress has actually taken place against those recommendations. Because if, even if the recommendations suggest something and the department may have a point to counter, but it's better that we have that institution, Parliament, must be seen to have actually done something about that. So that audit of compliance with the recommendations from the Public Service Commission will actually go also a long way in then strengthening and providing support to yourself. So as we say, it is good work done in the interest of the transparent democracy of which we are. We appreciate, we then also commit ourselves that we will definitely do something within our powers as Parliament to then be in a position to make sure that what has to be done should be done. Thanks.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. I just wanted to get, my question didn't seem to have been answered on the impact. I may have missed it, but I don't seem to be answered. If we could just get an answer on that. But in addition to that, there's two other questions I would like to ask, if I may. And the one relates to page 13, these 384 cases where departments and so on have not indicated as to whether criminal action has been taken. What do we have any indication as to whether any action was taken against these individuals? Because if we don't, then it obviously does have the danger of sending out a signal that we're not really that tough. But if we could just get some clarity on that as to what action was taken. Then just the last point would really be whether strong enough action is taken against everybody. Sometimes in the newspapers, whether it's accurate or not, is obviously something we need to know, but we get reports of people who've been suspended. And are sometimes suspended for a year, 2 years, on full pay, while investigations are taking place. And that also can send out a signal that, you know, it's okay, because you're still going to get your salary. It's going to take a long time, might be forgotten about. So I'm really just asking the question, are we satisfied that the processes that we have are the correct processes and that strong enough action is taken against every single person who's involved in cases of financial misconduct? Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think my question is partly covered by Honorable Zuma. But I was very much concerned about all this money that is not recovered, and nothing was mentioned on the amount that is recovered and the recovery plan, because part of it is just going to fall on what Greg has asked. But the recovery plan will really help us, because all this money is the money that was for service delivery and the people who are aware and ask us. And if there's no recovery plan, really, we are not representing them to go out and say, yes, we had. But we don't know what how the money will be recovered by the people who are known to have taken the money, because most of it is through theft and fraud. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Just one or two questions or areas of clarity that I would like to raise. But before that, I want also to echo my appreciation for the work that the PSC has done in this regard. It does say to us that the structures that we create to perform certain very important functions, especially that of dealing with corruption and fraud, are working indeed. And that as part of the global family that is dealing with the issues of crime and corruption, particularly in public service, we are marching forward ourselves in line with the rest of the world, and that must be commended. I do want to say that the PSC needs a lot of support from ourselves and the general public in this regard, so that we are able to stem corruption out of the public service. I do want to ask clarity on the issue raised on page 14, bullet 3, where you're saying that there's been an increase in the number of cases, but a substantial decrease in the financial cost. Could you explain how do you come to the conclusion, given the fact that some departments have not reported to you about the cost involved? Secondly, is the PSC able to get information? And I think that is the question that has just been raised. Are you able to get information about measures taken to recover state funds that are lost in this respect? And lastly, are we suggesting that once a person resigns, before the internal disciplinary actions are taken or are concluded, and before criminal proceedings are concluded, then that person has been able to get away with it, and there is no way of following that person up and make that person at least pay back if we can't discipline in any other form. Thank you.
Thank you, KK.
Thank you, sir. I just need some clarity here. It's in connection with the control mechanisms. Let's know from the commission whether they do work with the Auditor General's office. Let me know that the AG's office is auditing the books, and from time to time, certain reports are released by the AG. What I'd like to know from the commission is that when they gather this information, do they also look into the Auditor General's report? Thank you.
Thank you. Caleb?
Thanks, Chair. Yeah, I've been listening attentively, Chairperson. And it's only befitting that this kind of a report is received here by the two committees that have the benefit of having a bird's eye view over all the portfolios that are covered here in Parliament. Yourself having to focus on issues as to how generally the public service operates, and ourselves on the issue of budget implementation. But then it doesn't complete the job. The focus is not complete if we do not have our sister committees having this to interact and engage intensely with this matter. Chair, on the issue to try just to improve on the correlation of information, one seems to be missing this kind of information in most of the departments when they report to Parliament. Some departments do not even touch on issues of misconduct in their annual reports. I'm checking whether we will be insisting that all departments do so in future, that they should cover in their annual report once. How have they dealt with such issues? Some departments do not do that. But, Chairperson, some of the issues have been covered, but there are two provinces. The issue of Eastern Cape has been a high number or high instances in this regard. doesn't it also reflect the kind of dedicated focus that happened summit in the last few years in the Eastern Cape, having the Public Service Administration, DG, camping in the Eastern Cape? These high numbers, don't they reflect a kind of a dedicated focus? But with the issue of this province that did not, a specific department in Gauteng that did not report at all, we're talking here 205, 206. What has happened since then? Has this matter been followed up, or they are just left at their own recognition that they'll report whenever they receive it? Thanks, Jeff, for now.
Thanks. Commissioner, maybe you want to respond to some of the questions that are raised.
I was going to ask for relief, Chair, that we take them in smaller batches so that we should avoid missing some of them. Honorable Slim, and I beg your pardon, I'm so sorry not to answer you. You know, to us, a rand lost, which should have been spent on a book, the consequence of that is education delivery impaired and a denial of the right to a child. Money that should have been spent on school feeding has direct consequences on a child who's hobbled in receiving a education, as it were. Similarly with health, the impact, there are direct impacts. It's health denied, it's rights denied as a result of theft or fraud. But in terms of the implications of the functioning of the public service, you know, Chapter 10 of the Constitution describes what the functionality of the Public Service Commission, of the public service, how it should be measured. So in terms of Principle 1, that public administration must be efficient, effective, and economic. A department that loses money and doesn't even know it's lost money is constitutionally ineffective on Principle 1. So it's impaired on Principle 1. That has a cascading impact on the fulfillment of effectiveness in terms of the other principles, being responsive to the needs of the people. If your culture on Principle 1 is skewed, you cannot be totally responsive because your eye, one eye is looking at stealing some of the money. So in impact, look at the principles on Chapter 10, there are practical consequences leading to the impairment of the public services as such. And for me, I think as a commissioner, I'm finishing my term next year. I hope one day, on the basis of just this one report, a committee in Parliament will summon departments as Gopada and say, why? What happened? That is something that is beyond the Public Service Commission. That is the action that we have really been yearning for, that parliamentarians will call departments and say, on Principle 1, efficiency, effectiveness, and economy, and ethics. And ethics. You are falling foul, and we have tangible evidence that you are falling foul. For example, on misconduct, this is what is happening in your department. That's what we hoped would be happening by now. But I know that we will get to that point. Honorable Kalipi, departments are required to report cases of financial misconduct, to include information on that in their annual report, in accordance with the treasury regulations. They have to. So if a report doesn't include that, it's incomplete. It's non-compliant. It disables Parliament in terms of getting a fuller view of what's happening when we talk about these practical measures that can be pinned down on corruption. And The Eastern Cape is a case, I think, that is well worth looking at, because I went to the Eastern Cape with some of the members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Administration 2 years ago. We came out of there really, really, really worried about what was happening there. There were no systems or anything. I've just come back from the Eastern Cape, and they've just turned in an extraordinary way for a government institution within a period of about 3 to 4 years. They have systems in place. Compliance-wise, on financial disclosures, they are 100%. They top a government. And I believe that when some of the new structures of the social welfare department like SASA were established, they drew on good practices that were coming out from the Eastern Cape. So we see a dedicated effort that will probably unravel, surface the problems that we couldn't really pin down, but could only just see that there was something that was not right that was happening here. So we have a clear sense that something is happening there, because there are systems in place and there are follow-ups that are happening. And where they are stuck, they will tell us that we need your help, or we're still clarifying our minds on this particular thing. There was a question about the reports of the Auditor General. Yes, we look at the reports of the Auditor General. We collaborate. We also have a memorandum of understanding with the Auditor General to avoid duplication of work. Again, in order to serve Parliament to the best of our ability as a constitutional institution. I'm looking at the questions, Caroline, Finney, if I've left some of the questions unanswered, please come back to me. What pleases me is that you are engaging with these figures, as we said, and you are commenting on the saying it's unacceptable. And when you see the number of corruption, the tangible number of corruption, it is precisely that we would like you to do.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'd like to respond to the question relating to the numbers of cases reported vis-a-vis the loss to the state, the financial loss or the cost. The figures must be looked at with the understanding that there was an amount of 92 million that represented a single case in the Eastern Cape last year. So that might have inflated the cost that was reported in the last cycle. So the amount of 45 million this year obviously covers everybody, but that case made the cost big. But I must mention also that amount was also recovered. And then, talking to the question of the recovery of money lost, the Pensions Act makes provision that if a person steals from government or is found guilty of fraud and the government employee, such monies can be recovered from his pension before he gets his pension payout. That is a process that takes a little bit of time. And also, if you consider the fact that recovery of monies lost in an instance of fraud or corruption, sometimes the department would use the criminal process or use civil proceedings to recover the money, and those take time, and they would of necessity then would not be reported in the same cycle. So that is why it is important for departments to indicate the reasons for non-recovery, because in some instances you find that recovery is happening, but because it is linked to a criminal case or a civil case, then such recovery takes a while. And to further mention that when we look specifically at amounts in excess of 100,000, in terms of the Prevention and Combating of Corruption Activities Act, it makes certain mandatory reporting requirements on a person of a position in authority to, in terms of Section 34, then report this kind of allegations to the SEP. And that obviously is worrisome to us that it's not happening.
you want to say something, Chief? You know, fellow?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think as the Commission continues to furnish us with more information, it is becoming increasingly clear that quite a number of corrective steps that have been taken in this particular instance in the Eastern Cape are due largely to the role that they have played. Plus, if I have, as a result of the tone that I used, been understood not to be complimentary in my remarks, that should not be the case. the Public Service Commission, as a matter of fact, appeared before the ATO Committee on Chapter 9 and Associated Institutions, and it is one particular entity, Chairperson, that we had a very positive impression about in terms of its activities. So by no means should it be suggested that I don't recognize the positive role that they are playing. But my question, perhaps, on, for instance, the audit committees, to the extent that the audit committees assist the overall report of the Auditor General in respect of departments, is it your sense that departments have got audit committees and that the procedures there are quite standard and there is 100% compliance with the terms of reference and so forth, the composition of committees? Does it really depend on departments, how those should be constituted? I know in quite a number of departments, accounting officers are, or heads of departments are part of those committees. And I'm raising this chairperson because of the observation that the Commission is making on page 15 of the PowerPoint, which says a strong link, bullet number 3, between investigators of cases of financial misconduct and the internal audit units of departments should be established. Obviously, it looks like a recommendation that they are making. Hence my question. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner, you want to say something on that?
Yes. No, Honourable Member, we are your servants. If we are not serving you correctly, we expect you to tell us that we are not, and we don't take it badly at all. It would be sad if we didn't strengthen our rigor in your service. So we welcome any comments, and we don't take them in a negative light at all. From the M&E reports that we have done, the internal audit. Again, remember that these are systems that were not there prior to 1994. It's a whole new culture of financial management and accountability that has been put in place. And we see a refinement and a certain level of sophistication setting in the public service. But of course, on your behalf, we will never be happy until they get it absolutely right. Whether they will ever get it absolutely right or not, we don't know. So we chase them all the time, improve on this, improve on that, working with the Auditor General or drawing on the comments that come from the Auditor General. A fairly new one thing that's come that I think in general departments are battling with as part of the minimum anti-corruption capacity and the whole regimen of managing corruption is an investigative capacity. We've said that in our SOPs the year before, that needs to be strengthened. And the next loop would be to ensure that everything connects properly, that the investigative capacities link nicely with the internal audit, so that when all of this work has been done, there is swift resolution of cases, be it misconduct or be financial misconduct or be any other related matter. So probably our weakness would be in how the investigative capacity is settling and setting itself as an institution in the public service.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think Corisillo and Kalipi, you put a point of which is a challenge to the public service and that administration to say, now we're exposed to this kind of report. We are not even a quarter of the members of this institution.
how to make them also be exposed to this kind of report. It's a challenge to us that we have to need to follow up. But another challenge in general in this institution is that you will do our oversight work and come back and table a report. We all clap hands, it ends there, it goes to the coffin. No follow-up is made by those that they reported, no parliament, nothing. That's why Silo was sitting with all of these figures. We forget what we've adopted last week. We forget what we have adopted last year. Now, what are we here for? Why don't you take your jackets and go home and bring those people that have voted up in here to do the proper work? Because while we're here representing those people that cannot come here, they rely on us. Now, I appreciate this kind of report. That's why I say to the members, even those that are sitting here, we're all South Africans. Whatever wrongdoings we are making, it's not only for us in this institution, it's for the country as a whole. What good work we're doing for the country as a whole. So the commissioners are also South Africans. We must engage them, they must also engage us to do a proper job. When they make recommendations to us, they're supposed to make a follow-up. What have you done with the recommendations that we've submitted you of? Because some of the decisions that we are taking, they cannot take it. It's our duty to do that. So what are we doing? Maybe it's because of more than 1 million meetings that are taking place here that we do not focus. A day you attend about 10, 15 meetings. You can't be focused in that situation. Something that I believe needs to be corrected very well, Comrade Silo. I get frustrated sometimes. When we closed Parliament yesterday, it was not a half of the members of Parliament that were sitting there, but we were passing bills. The whole members were out, were not here. You understand? But the public out there is expecting them to implement those decisions that they took yesterday. It was not even a quarter. Why? What are we doing here? Now, I'm trying to say then that it's good to be exposed to this. We are lucky to be here. We get this information. But you must act on it. It should not end up saying, oh, we commend you, commissioners, for that report that they are providing us. But what are we doing about it? It's homework that I'll call this meeting again, this kind of a meeting. And then we must assess and say what is the way forward from now on. We come to the end of this presentation because some of the items that reflect on the agenda needs only the public service administration members to take a decision on. Even then, we will take decision when we come, Comrade KK. With those few words, I thank you very much. Your participation has helped me too, Silo. Yeah, but lunch is available, Comrade Kalipi, here at the old assembly. If that workshop is, on the dining room at the old assembly.